a really quick and exciting announcement to make. The Menopause and Cancer podcast is now also on YouTube, and I'm so excited that more people now get to watch our conversations. So the link to the YouTube channel is in our show notes. Please go and subscribe to the channel so that more people who need to hear our conversations are able to find them. Thank you. Welcome to the Menopause and Cancer podcast, where we speak with cancer patients, survivors, and incredible experts to help us find solutions to our symptoms and ideas to improve our health. My name is Dani Binnington, and today I want to have a conversation about something rather controversial, and that is the use of testosterone therapy for someone who's been diagnosed with breast cancer, not just once, but twice. I'm delighted to be talking to the beautiful Ursula. Ursula is a breast cancer patient, and she's going to tell us how her experience of perimenopause was before breast cancer came along, how her experience of menopause was whilst on tamoxifen, and how she then navigated her menopause after her second breast cancer diagnosis. Now, we know that having conversations that are different to the general menopause conversation are always hard to have. And I'm very grateful that Ursula really shares her decision-making process and what sort of got her out of bed and why her sort of real passion got ignited for truly going after what she feels is right for her. I really can't thank her enough for her honesty and for speaking to me on the podcast. And now let's invite her in and find out what's happened. Hi, Ursula. It is really amazing. We've been chatting in German because you're from Germany. I'm from Austria. And now we've got to record this podcast. Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
So we've connected over your story, which is slightly different to that of many other breast cancer survivors. And I really want to talk to you about how and what happened. And so if you don't mind, you've had two breast cancer diagnoses to date, but would you mind taking us back to your first diagnosis? I know you're German, you live in London. Tell us about you. What happened when you found your cancer?
So I'm German, probably can't keep that hidden for long. You'll be able to hear it. And I've been living in London since 1999, so quite a long time, so I consider myself a Londoner. I haven't got the blue passport, but, but yes, very much at home here. And I work in IT, I work for a trade union. So in 2018, I was 47 years old, perimenopausal, but I was still menstruating. I got diagnosed with invasive ductal breast cancer. It was a grade 2, so it hadn't spread to the lymph nodes, thankfully, so it was still quite small early stages. Ironically, I found the lump on my birthday that year, so I'll never forget. I'll never forget that day. And so the treatment plan was a lumpectomy, so remove the cancer and the tissue around, remove a few lymph nodes, make sure to test them, make sure nothing is spread, followed by radiotherapy. And then, of course, the usual is followed by endocrine therapy, in my case, tamoxifen, because I was perimenopausal at that stage. In terms of menopausal symptoms that I had were mainly around vaginal atrophy and UTI issues, and I'd actually been prescribed vaginal estrogen a couple of years before that, and that helped immensely, though I do think it was all very localized, but nobody then even asked me the question, what else is going on with you? You're clearly perimenopausal, what else is going on? But that's another conversation.
So I'm going to ask you though, Ursula, do you almost feel like the support you got with perimenopause was inadequate as a healthy woman?
It was very localized, because at that time I'd been having, I mean, there were things that happened in my life, a major bereavement and a very stressful job situation at that point. And that kind of threw me into a period of kind of very poor mental health, depression, which was treated with sort of antidepressants, and I mean, I had some very good bereavement counseling at that stage. And I had been suffering from recurring UTIs and vaginal or vulval abscesses brought on by declining estrogen levels. during that period as well. So clearly it's all connected. So now I'm joining up the dots. And I got referred to a gynecologist, urogynecologist, which is great, and got that checked out and got prescribed vaginal estrogen. And that really helped with dryness, all sorts, kind of all the kind of infections, inflammations got sorted out, and it got a bit better. However, at that point, there was no question about what else is going on, so it wasn't joined up. And in fact, the word perimenopause or menopause wasn't even mentioned then. And I think it should have been. And I think either my GP then and the urogynecologist then could have put two and two together. So it's that was something that now, with hindsight, I'm thinking there's a gap there. And that's a gap that hopefully with more awareness is starting to get filled, because women come, go and see a doctor with a specific symptom. You've got 10 minutes. You need a bit more time to get to the bottom of it, what's going on. If it's women, my kind of perimenopause, kind of women in their 40s, for example, onwards. Or for some women, of course, they're younger.
And of course, it's really important you mentioned that, because so many people of us feel that there are gaps in our healthcare, in not just how our cancer was discovered, but what happened before that cancer diagnosis. So many of us feel that the dots weren't all joined up, and it is up to us to join those dots.
Exactly.
And sometimes we feel exhausted and we feel like we've got nothing left to give, and we feel we have mental health issues because other things have happened to us. And then the cancer diagnosis comes and sits on top of that. It can almost feel impossible to join the dots for ourselves. You've gone a different way. And I want to talk about that, because it's very brave to do things your way. So what happened? You've started tamoxifen as part of your endocrine treatment. How did that go for you? Hey, thanks for listening to this episode. 73% of people who listen to my podcast haven't yet clicked the follow button on their podcast player. I want these conversations to reach as many women as possible who might need it. So if you've ever enjoyed this podcast, please hit the follow button now.
Not very well at all. I mean, I had my, not suspicions, but I did think, when you get all the leaflets with the tamoxifen and saying a possible side effect, and the possible side effects to me look pretty horrendous. I've also got to say that my prognosis was excellent at that time. I had a successful lumpectomy. There was nothing found in the lymph nodes, went through radiotherapy. And then started the tamoxifen, but the kind of the reading and the research about it was something that I then started doing. I started reading up on it, and I looked at the kind of forums, it's not the wild internet out there, but the kind of the, from the official breast cancer charities or Macmillan and things, and kind of about what women were saying. And a lot of it sounded a lot worse than what the doctors would make you believe when you get your first prescription, where to say this is the course, and you've got to take it for 5 years. And there wasn't much conversation about actual menopause. I don't even think they mentioned the vaginal estrogen, but it just goes to show that, again, joining all these things together about a woman my age, there's kind of a lot of stuff going on already. I started getting prescribed the tamoxifen, and it really felt like a tap had been turned off. I started getting kind of a new symptom of the menopause on a weekly basis. So it started with hot flushes, which manifested in kind of really bad, kind of sort of felt like anxiety attacks. I can only prescribe them, or kind of panic attack that rushes to your head, aches and joint pains all of a sudden, getting plunged into a really, really low mood. After kind of successfully completed my physiological treatments, I'd actually been feeling quite chipper, quite good and positive. I felt like I was in a kind of diving bell made of lead, and I was not quite myself. I felt I was in this big leaden fog and it felt really horrible. They said, oh yes, a possible side effect can be bone pain. And I couldn't even imagine what bone pain was until then. And then I knew what bone pain was. And I thought, oh my goodness, if that's what it's going to be like for the next 5 years without estrogen. And that's when I started reading about the beneficial effects of estrogen, because again, nobody really tells you this. And I stuck it out a few months and I spoke to my oncologist and we discussed it, and my risk of recurrence was so low. My prognosis was so good that, and I didn't want to stop it without his agreement, without my oncologist at least being aware of it. And he's very supportive, and he's certainly one of those. I was very fortunate that he also agrees the quality of life sometimes is more important than going by the strict clinical route. So I stopped the tamoxifen, and again, it was amazing. It was like the tap had been turned back on. I started feeling myself again. And it really shows how important hormones and estrogen is in your body. So it's not in our heads.
Yeah, because the tamoxifen obviously doesn't remove the estrogen from your body. So your side effects weren't because your body was suddenly plunged into more of an estrogen deficient state. It was obviously a combination of everything, the perfect storm, and also what's in those drugs as side effects, because all of these drugs have other side effects they come with and they give us all of these symptoms. And it's also so fascinating how, of course, we're all different. We know that. How every person reacts so differently, right? It's always, you know, from speaking to 10 women, you'll get 10 different stories about their experience, which is why every single week I get to my Fridays and I think it's ludicrous that anyone would say this is what we would do with all of these breast cancer survivors and we lump them all into a box, and this is what we do with all of our bowel cancer survivors and it's one treatment for all. Because drugs work differently, they have different benefits, different risks, but they also have different effects for us. And so it needs a personalized plan for each of us.
It does, absolutely.
So you had the oncologist agree with you that it was a good idea to stop the tamoxifen. And then what happened?
And then, of course, my natural menopause started. It's kind of my menopausal symptoms. I was perimenopausal. But then after I'd already having had this kind of medically induced menopause, as it were, coming out of that. But then, of course, I just went down the slope of having just generally menopausal symptoms. So I really wasn't feeling myself. It wasn't as bad as the second time, which I'm going to come to later, but I really felt I was lacking energy. I was, again, aches and pains, concentration issues, fatigue, and generally just not feeling right. And I spoke to my oncologist then, and he did say, because there is actually some good science behind it, that estrogen by itself has been found not to increase a breast cancer recurrence risk or the risk of breast cancer, by which time I've been reading that book by Dr. Avram Bluming called Estrogen Matters, which was quite useful. And so I was put on very low dose estrogen patches, which worked for a while, but I didn't take them very long, but I did feel they had a beneficial effect, but it wasn't on full HRT. And then, of course, COVID hit, but I continued having my annual mammograms. And then in 2021, which was at the tail end of the awful winter lockdown, 2021, I had another routine mammogram and they found some microcalcifications. Any breast cancer survivors know that kind of these things are just kind of grainy bits inside your breast, which can go one way or the other. And I had a mammogram biopsy then, and it was confirmed that it was, and it was, oh yes, the same breast. It was confirmed that it was non-invasive ductal carcinoma in situ, so it was not cancer yet. Could have developed into invasive cancer, but not yet. But because that breast had already been treated with radiotherapy, and because my breast is quite small, it was scattered, so a lumpectomy was out of the question. If you already had therapy, radiotherapy on a breast, you can't have radiotherapy again on the same breast. So the clinical decision at the time was to have a mastectomy and a reconstruction at the time. And I thought, so that was a bit of a shocker. But then I thought, yes, okay, let's do that. And again, with a mastectomy, the prognosis was going to be very good. No other treatment needed, even though they did remove a few lymph nodes and they were all clear.
Can I ask you a couple of difficult questions, Ursula? And please feel free to not answer them and just say no. At the time of your second diagnosis, did you ever feel, I wish I had stayed on tamoxifen and maybe that could have kept my second diagnosis at bay? And my second question is, did you ever feel that maybe the estrogen was a cause? Because there are so many stories and myths and we can't help what we think sometimes. So whatever you thought, could you share that with us?
I didn't think it about the tamoxifen, no. About the estrogen patches, yes, I did think, but then I wasn't really on them for long enough, I thought. And it was such a low dose. It was really kind of the lowest prescribable patch you can have. And I mean, I know you have these feelings, kind of these what ifs, but I tried not to make myself feel kind of guilty about it. And neither did the clinical team either. So they were all fine. They were to say, well, first of all, it can become invasive. It might not. You might have lived with those calcifications for a long time. I know a lot of people die with kind of undiagnosed cancers and they've just had them for decades and everything was fine. But of course, with my prior diagnosis, it's best just to go for the belt and braces approach, have a mastectomy. And I did think, well, what if, but then everything felt so strange anyway, because I never thought I'd have breast cancer. I'm the first one in my family. The first experience felt so, I mean, what was happening to me, I just found it fascinating. First of all, the whole medical side of it, going through the process. So I was kind of in it, but also observing it. So I was not even...
Almost removed.
Almost removed and panicking, but also being, yes, certainly very much in awe of the medical service that I had. Mm.
And we of course know that people have local recurrences when they are on tamoxifen, when they are on endocrine treatment, when they do all of the things that are suggested.
Precisely
to us.
That too.
And such is life. And yet I know we all have brains and they play bad games with us sometimes. And that's why I really wanted to know in which way your brain took you, because it's fascinating.
I certainly wasn't beating myself up over it, no. And also, because none of my medical professionals did either. None of them said. In fact, there was more of a kind of, or the surgeon said, that's because radiotherapy didn't zap them all. I kind of thought, I'm sure the radiotherapists would have a different view of it. So it kind of, this is just, I found that quite amusing, but nobody made me feel guilty and responsible in a sense. And I think that's really important because this stuff happens. And yes, exactly, you just do not know.
So Ursula, you had to get back to your oncologist and you had to stick your heads together and say, and now what do we do? Right? Different plan.
So I had a mastectomy, which went really well. I had a tuck flap reconstruction, which is where they take a chunk out of your thigh, which was amazing. And I didn't have to wait long then anywhere. I was actually quite fortunate because it happened still during the COVID pandemic. So the hospitals were actually a lot less busy. So everything where you might have to wait ages now, it happened a lot more quickly then. So I had a brilliant oncological surgeon. I had a fantastic plastic surgeon. And together, they kind of got rid of the breast tissue, reconstructed my breast. I even got to keep my nipple and it looks amazing. And I recovered from that. And then, of course, the question was, what now? Endocrine therapy again. And I had that conversation with my surgeon, not my clinical oncologist. And the surgeon said, well, normally, because you're probably menopausal now, we would prescribe you letrozole or anastrozole, aromatase inhibitors. But I know that you didn't react very well to the tamoxifen either. And what I knew then was that, if anything, these are the heavy duty ones, where I think there are a lot more issues being reported around kind of, the experiences that women have. And in fact, a friend of mine, she was on, I think, letrozole and anastrozole, and she had a terrible time with it. And I thought, I don't think, you know, I haven't gone through all of this. And a physical recovery that enabled and kind of, and it took a long while, the healing, and it's a massive body trauma just to put my body through another medical-induced trauma, as it were. And the surgeon, she actually agreed that my prognosis was so good that it's okay. We offer it as standard, but we also do realize quality of life is also important. So I didn't just unilaterally decide. She agreed, okay, no endocrine treatment, which was good. So they were very, very good in the sense that the focus was also on the quality of life, not just you've got to do this. And I know from friends, then it's not the same everywhere. There are different schools of thought that people have, or that clinicians have. They think, no, no way, you've got to go on this. And so, but that was
every patient is different,
of course. With my cancer diagnosis, I think probably bang on. Of course, with other cancer diagnoses, I was estrogen receptor positive. Everything else was not affected. So in that case, fine. I can't comment on people that have any of the other various variations of breast cancer that you can have.
But also every person is so different with what worries they come into a consultation, right? Your friend's experience of being on endocrine treatment would have influenced you. Your past experience on being on tamoxifen has influenced you. And so whatever we allow into whatever sort of influences us is going to sort of change our decision-making process. It's just the way it is, right? Someone that doesn't know much about it or doesn't read much about it might actually just embark on just doing it and giving it a go, and they might do their research later. There isn't a right way around. And I just always think it's really fascinating to hear what people do. It's brilliant, because as long as we're all given the right to discuss, and in your case, what I wanted to highlight is great, you were able to have that really informed decision-making process. It really feels like shared decision-making, what happened between you and your team. And I want to highlight that because it exists and exists in many medical teams. And I want to really celebrate that, because we know it doesn't exist everywhere, but so much learning from that.
It is, but then I've got to say, you do need to force that conversation. It doesn't necessarily come automatically. So even if somebody, that's because I've got the wherewithal to do that reading, and I looked up kind of academic papers, and I've got a sort of critical analytical mind, and I understand a bit about data as well from my job. So that also helps, but not every woman has got that kind of background. So in that sense, I was quite privileged that I could have the conversation, rather than, because sometimes you're just so frightened. And I've got to say, I was not scared of dying, and I was not scared of my life. I felt that I'm in good hands here. I did not think, sometimes I had, lately with kind of, sometimes I do have, but that's kind of been more of a recent thing, that kind of these thoughts about mortality and what ifs, and you need to kind of work your way through that and try to balance out those thoughts. But me personally, I just thought, this is what's happening now, and my quality of life now is important. And to be frank, I thought after the first breast cancer, it's like, oh, if I get a recurrence, science would have moved on so much. You get immune therapy, you can get other treatment, fine. But I think we're a bit of a long way away from that.
your second menopause, or actually your third, because we're talking perimenopause, we're talking a menopause transition on tamoxifen, and we're talking another menopause experience after your second cancer diagnosis. You didn't just leave it at that by not taking your endocrine treatment. You wanted to explore other options of helping you feel better, and you are now on testosterone therapy.
I am, that's right. I mean, with that second time, I thought, okay, knock anything related to estrogen on the head and see how it goes. But it did develop quite severe actual menopause symptoms. So it was after, I mean, I'd recovered after my surgeries, I recovered very well, but then the lack of natural hormones, and I've been getting tests and blood tests and things, really kicked in for me very badly. And also it coincided with the time I was returning to work. I felt I've really lost my mojo now. How can I carry on working in a job that I like? But of course, it's kind of sort of mentally demanding role when the classic symptoms, brain fog, concentration, memory, low energy, bad sleep, and particularly aches and pains, joint pains. I could barely walk getting out of bed in the mornings, which was new, which has never happened before. And that's despite me actually doing yoga and Pilates regularly. So feeling fairly physically fit, just not feeling myself. And I think that's what a lot of women are saying. I'm not feeling myself. And for the first time, I thought, I actually feel old before my time. There's nothing wrong with getting older and with aging. But with everything I needed to do, you know, working, maintaining my household, living life, that's not how it should be. So I asked to be referred. Of course, I had to wait for a very long time because it's all oversubscribed, underfunded. And then I got to see a menopause consultant and spoke about my symptoms. And I said, what can be done? Because I'm a breast cancer survivor, the traditional HRT route is, for me, not an option at the moment. What else is there? And I'd been looking into testosterone, because at the moment testosterone mainly gets prescribed as an add-on to regular HRT to help with libido. And that's the only way you can actually get a prescription, which actually gets my goat, because it's, you know, if a woman can service a man better, she can have testosterone. But actually that it has, and I've seen some studies that it does have other beneficial effects.
So did you go into the conversation with that? Did you say, I want to talk to you about testosterone? Because I think any menopause specialist isn't going to just talk about that, isn't it? So did you say, I want to talk about that, give me some facts, or I've read this? How did that conversation go?
The fantastic thing was, I had it in my mind, but I didn't even have to mention it. That was the time when I actually burst into tears, and I really haven't been crying much throughout, except during the tamoxifen phase, because for the first time I felt understood and I felt properly heard, and somebody gets it. Somebody actually gets it. And that felt like such a relief. And they prescribed me testosterone gel. It took a while to kick in, but it really worked. The joint pains and aches, I got my mobility back. It was all of, so one morning I realized I got out of bed and I could walk on my feet without hobbling and going out. And that's when I realized, oh, yes, something is working, because I haven't been doing anything differently. Been doing the same kind of exercise. I'm in a healthy lifestyle and everything. Fairly healthy.
Ursula, when I go into our Facebook group, when I listen to experts talk, there is, of course, talk about testosterone and the use of that after for breast cancer survivors. But a lot of the conversations are that there is a worry that the testosterone will change and metabolize into estrogen in the body. Did you have that conversation with your doctor?
I'm pretty sure we did, but again, I'd be willing to take that risk as well. I mean, I've had blood tests. My blood estrogen levels are very, very low. We should all ask for a bone density scan, which I also had. So now I've got the baseline where my bone density is normal. and then get another scan in 3 years and see how that goes on. Because again, bone health, it's something where kind of estrogen plays a really, really important part. My first blood test after I started the testosterone, it was about 6 months in or so. Well, testosterone was 6-9 months, was really high. Estrogen was very low. Now the testosterone level is normal, in a normal range.
And so, Ursula, was there a conversation with your oncologist? Because your oncologist sounds like a person you really felt you could talk about shared decision making. It was, you know, you talked about tamoxifen, then you talked with the surgeon about your second diagnosis. You felt very much part of this team. Was your oncologist, a surgeon, part of this conversation about going on testosterone, or how did that happen? I mean, it was all at the same hospital. It's an NHS hospital, I know.
Yes. I told my oncologist that I was getting prescribed estrogen. And of course, it's all in my notes because they can see it. It's all at the same hospital, so they can see who's seeing whom. But I didn't ask the oncologist's permission to go on testosterone, anything like that. So that was a conversation between me and the menopause consultant. Testosterone has really, I mean, to use that cliche, it has been a game changer for me. And also, most importantly, I feel I don't miss taking estrogen for now, which I think is really, really good. It really helped. Energy, brain concentration. I did feel I got my mojo back.
Thank you for sharing that, because I know you've gone a very unusual way. It's brave to make decisions that feel right in your gut and where we don't have big evidence to support it either way, right? And it always takes a lot of, yes, self-advocacy, but also self-belief that what we're feeling is right for us, we can act upon. And I think sometimes we've lost that because it is much easier to kind of like trust someone else, especially when our body has given us and made a cancer. It's sometimes easier to give that trust to other people. And you have kept that trust with yourself and you've really steered this. And you've been brave of sharing this here because you've gone an unusual way. And we also know that many menopause specialists in the country, in the UK, for example, are not going to prescribe testosterone to a patient like you. And so it's even more unique because we all know we don't get the same treatment. And it is something we really need to work towards, because depending on where you are in the country, but also depending on where you are in the world, you're going to get different information, different conversations. And so it makes our journeys even more unique. There is a common theme, and yet we all need to make sure that we trust our gut feeling and embark on inquiring what we want to inquire, whatever that is, however outrageous someone thinks that might be. We've got to go after that gut feeling and what is right for us, and then make our research, do our research so that we can make informed decisions.
I mean, it's good that that conversation is happening, even though some of the pushback against is kind of really quite hair-raising. But I would say, just because of question things, and if somebody recommends something or says something, or even a clinician, ask the questions and, yes, be questioning, be skeptical. And I know it's hard, and especially it is a really difficult time when you're, and it's really frightening time, and especially, I mean, I can't comment on what it's like when it's a lot more serious cancer. I was only stage two, but what do you do when you're at an advanced stage, when it has metastasized, all these kinds of things? But I do think generally quality of life after cancer needs to be front and center. And again, the conversation about the menopause needs to be front and center, because what we're experiencing and what our bodies are experiencing, it's not just in our heads.
I'm really grateful that you shared your perimenopause, your first menopause experience, your second menopause experience with us. And it really just shows it's a transition. We don't have to always feel that we are stuck. There is always room for conversation, and we deserve a conversation. Wherever that leads us, whatever we decide to do, it's the conversation we deserve. And that's why we're having these conversations here on the Menopause and Cancer Podcast. It's something might get sparked in someone and thinks, I need to explore this. Or someone might think, I would never do what Ursula does, but I need to explore something else. And that's great. Whatever it is that people walk away from, it's helping us think outside the box, and it's opening the conversation, and it's making everyone be part of it. However much you're in the minority or majority of what other people do, it's irrelevant, isn't it? It's 100% for each one of us, whatever we do. And that's what's important to share. Thank you for your presence.
Oh, it was great talking to you.
For your honesty. And yeah, we shall meet one day, I hope.
Oh, and thank you. Thanks for all you do, Dani.
I can't thank Ursula enough for coming onto this podcast with me today and for sharing her story, because every one of our stories is truly unique, even if we have been diagnosed with similar types of cancer at similar stages, at similar ages. Every one of us is navigating this in a very unique way because we're humans and we're three-dimensional, amazing human beings. And everything that has happened to us, all of our experiences are going to have an effect on how and what we're going to decide to do in the present moment. And that, again, is going to have an effect on how we're feeling, our long-term health, our overall health. And to talk to someone at a moment in time about what they've decided to do, and for them to share with us what's happened in the past, is truly special. To be part of someone's thinking process is a real privilege, and I can't thank Ursula enough for coming onto the show with me today. Now, I also know many of you are going to think, gosh, I'd never do what Ursula does, or I'd never be able to have all of those tricky conversations or say no to maybe endocrine treatment. And that's all okay, because as long as each one of us and you today who's listening to this conversation, if you have the answers that you need to make an informed decision, that's all really that matters to us. I truly believe that this is the foundation to really good healthcare. Thank you, Ursula. I've really loved talking to you today. And thank you all for being with us here on the Menopause and Cancer Podcast and for being part of our conversations.